Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Kasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim, and our guest today is Daniel Evans. So Daniel, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
I am a New York-based financial advisor to entrepreneurs. I've been doing it the last, I would say, 20 years. The last 10 years, I've been doing it as my own firm, as Evans & Company. And the industries that I'm most active in are food, beverage, and beauty. And it's all because I come from four generations of farming and had a farm stand business when I was a kid. It's my first business. And so I'm very familiar with the food and beverage area. I worked on Wall Street and worked with Cadbury Schweppes, Snapple, Campbell's Soup, Polaner All Fruit. I'm sure I'm missing a few, but I did a few M&A IPOs with some of those big food companies. And so I bring all that experience to my financial advisory work. I've been in finance for the last 30 years. So I haven't really made any real career changes.
That's awesome.
Pretty much summed it up, I think.
So how did you get into the finance industry in general? Like, what made you want to go into that?
Well, this is kind of, depending on the kind of person you are, you might find this funny or weird, but believe it or not, the movie Trading Places is the reason why I decided to go with the finance. I just thought it was so cool how Eddie Murphy went from being homeless to being like a trading all-star, like in commodities, you know, and how those men made that bet that that they could just have total control over someone's life, and then they just totally switched the game on them. And I thought that was cool. So since then, I was like, totally into finance. I just felt like this was something I wanted to do. Having a knowledge of finance, I felt, was an equalizer, especially growing up in, I grew up in East Hampton, New York, in Long Island. It's a very affluent community. And actually, one of my first jobs outside of the farm stand was to be, I was cleaning up a horse stable for a corporate lawyer's daughter who used to ride horses. I used to clean the manure and put it in a compost pile. I used to do that like every couple days a week for like $2 an hour. Well, and I started that at 12 years old. 10 years later, I was sitting across the table from that corporate lawyer as an investment banker. So talk about trading places. That was just, you know, that's when I knew I picked the right profession. It's exactly how I imagined it would be. And of course, over the years, after being inspired by Trading Places, I subscribed to Fortune magazine in high school, and I've been in the New York Times, and I've been reading the finance sections of all those ever since. I haven't stopped, actually. So it's been a long time. So that's how I got into finance. When I tell people Trading Places, though, they're like, are you serious? That's the reason? I don't know what they were looking for. I don't know if they're looking for me to part the Red Sea or something, or I don't know what they were thinking, but that's the reason.
Cool. So after all this, what do you think is the definition of success?
Well, I used to think it was about become a millionaire by the time you're 30, buy a big house, get married, have kids, and that was it. But then, you know, all that stuff is external. What I realized success is really growing as a person on the inside. Because even though I loved investment banking, I loved the money, I didn't like the person I was becoming because, you know, doing 100 hours of the same thing over and over again, it causes you to think like, what am I really doing here? I mean, is it really worth it? Like, I have no friends, I have no life, and I kind of want those things. I value those things more than money. So that's when I started making some career changes. And I ended up in the music business because I love music, played trumpet for many years, and a big music fan over the years, different kinds of music. So that's when I really started thinking more introspectively about who I was and what kind of person I wanted to become. That to me was going to be my definition of success. Who was going to end up, who did I want to be on my deathbed? Did I want to be the person that had regrets, or do I want to be the person that says, you know, oh, I wish I'd spent more time with my kids. I wish I didn't do investment banking. You know, I wish I didn't want to be that person, you know. So obviously as I got older and I got married and I had kids, you know, it all started to make sense. Because I think I wrote a post on this one, maybe even last week. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to be successful, but just not at a cost, per se. Not at the cost of my family or my quality of life, you know. I don't need all the trappings of life, per se, to be successful and happy.
Great. So, if that's the case, then what does your typical day look like?
I'm an early riser. I get up around 4 a.m. or so. I do prayer and meditation. I go for a walk, and then I work out, and then I pretty much spend my mornings, you know, working. In the last few years, I started doing a lot of writing. So I do a lot of writing in the morning when I'm the most creative. And then after that, part of the morning is over. The second half of the morning, which is probably like 9 to 12, I guess, that's when I'm looking at the markets, looking at accounts, trying to figure out where everyone is, you know, and, you know, if there's anything else I need to just to do in those accounts. And then usually in the afternoon, I'm doing some more reading, news stuff. And then, you know, I just kind of, but my day sort of ends around, I don't know, 4:30, around there, like a 12-hour day. But it's pretty easy going. After all the work, I mean, I'm pretty much done with work at 1 o'clock. Coast to the rest of the day after that.
That's awesome.
That's bad,
actually. It's good.
So how do you know this is a long-lasting business for me? Like you told me a story how you chose the finances, but what was the situation, what was the state when you said, okay, this is the long-lasting business for me, I'm gonna do this for the rest of my life?
Well, I thought that way about, when did I decide that I want to do this for the rest of my life, you're saying? Or is that the question?
What was the state, what was the situation when you said, okay, I'm going to do this business for the rest of my life, this is good? Like when you start, okay, this is, I like this and I'm gonna do this for the whole life.
That's a hard question to answer, because every career that I've done in finance has been like that. I'm doing investment banking for the rest of my life. I'm gonna be in the music business for the rest of my life. I'm gonna be in wealth management for the rest of my life. I mean, wealth management is what I've been doing for the last 20 years. So I've spent the most time doing that. I think what I love about wealth management is it's relationship driven, whereas investment banking is not. So, I mean, it is relationship driven, but, you know, at companies, CFOs, CEOs, they come and go, they move around, you know, that kind of thing. But with wealth management, you're dealing with people, you know, who are living in their own skin, you know, for their lives. So they're evolving, they're changing, and you're hopefully changing with them and helping them meet their goals. So I found that to be the most rewarding. And that is the reason why I've probably been in this business as long as I have, because of the relationships that I'm building with my clients and just with people in general. I'm a people person. Even though I'm a self-described introvert, I like one-on-one with people. And that is really what drives me and what has sustained me in this business. And like I said earlier, the writing is something that's new to wealth management, but that's also something that I've always been passionate about since I was a kid, was writing. I was a big reader and a writer as a kid. So this was something that that's becoming a big part of my business as well. It's another way I connect with people. So I would say that's when I knew this was going to be something I was going to do for the rest of my life, when I realized that my biggest strength was building relationships.
That's really cool. So I guess as of right now, right, you're so that you're reading like the markets, you're seeing kind of, you know, some of the trends. Where do you think that things are headed? I mean, I think, you know, many people are talking about recession. There's lots of layoffs. Like what is that? I guess, where do you think things are headed? And then I guess also, what does that mean for your business in the next like year or two?
The markets are cyclical. They do what they do. That's the thing that people sort of overlook. I actually majored in macroeconomics in college, and I love economics. But when it comes to managing money, when it comes to investing in companies that are publicly traded, what I realized is that these markets will do what they do naturally. There are going to be highs and there's going to be lows. It's just how I respond to those times that makes the big difference. Like, for example, like right now, as you know, inflation is at its highest in 40 years. But you know, it was a lot higher 4 years ago. It's nowhere near where it was. Many people are seeing inflation for the first time, but they're not seeing it the way it was in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, when there was gas rations and food shortages and all kinds of weird stuff going on back then. This is high prices, but you know, supply chain issues, but it's not the same. But it was bound to happen. So you can kind of plan for these things, but at the end of the day, you want to invest in the companies that have a history of reacting to cyclical changes in the market, in the economy. And those companies that operate the best are the ones that have positive cash flow, that fund their own growth internally, and actually don't even go to capital markets to raise money. They actually do everything in-house. And I mean, these are big companies that we know, household names. They pay dividends to their shareholders, and they raise those dividends every year despite what's happening in the economy. Those are the companies that you invest in. And when you invest in those companies, there's a sort of like a piece that comes with constructing a portfolio. Now, when that becomes the foundation, the markets kind of don't matter per se. However, though, I will say that I do carve out a very small portion of the portfolio for like IPOs. Sometimes an IPO does really well, and most times they don't do really well, especially in the last 3 years. There's only been one IPO that's done really well, I know of, but there are quite a few that have not done well. But I think the IPO market is going to come back. I think people are going to be able to invest in things. So that's exciting to look forward to. And also, I think we're at the bottom of the bond market in inflation. I don't think there's going to be any more raises. That's my opinion. Because I think things just, you know, employment rate. The unemployment rate, the unemployment, no, the jobless rate has decreased somewhat, it's down. So that's also really good. That means the inflation, the interest rate increases are working. So if there are any increases, they'll be very, very small. On that note, we won't see any decreases for a while. But when that happens, and it's going to happen, you know, you want to be in the markets for sure.
Right. So in terms of, I mean, you've worked with lots of companies, like as you mentioned, but could you be like a little bit more specific? I'm just curious, like, what would you say differentiates these companies that you've worked with that have been successful year in and year out? You talked about dividends, you talked about being capital efficient, but I guess like what other qualities maybe, you know, does leadership have that you think separates these companies that are successful for, you know, decade after decade after decade?
Good question. Well, a lot of these CEOs are very charismatic and people oriented. So they're really good with people, I would say, you know, and that's everyone from the C-suite all the way down to like security in the lobby. They are just friendly and amicable and just good to be around. Some of them are always cracking jokes. And, you know, you think, you know, for a CEO in a big company, if they'd be, you know, sort of uptight and just stoic and, you know, not all the time. They're cracking jokes. And there's, I'll share a story with you. There's one CEO, I'm not going to name the company, but there is one CEO of a very large company who had an opportunity to invest in a fast food chain. And when it first got started, and I don't know if I can tell this story. So he said, I said, so what's the name of your company? He's like, I'm going to name it after my daughter, you know? And he said, but why would you do that? Your daughter is not even pretty. And that would turn out Wendy's. And I was like, I cannot believe this guy said that. It's so crazy. You know, this is the CEO of a company talking like this. So, and at the time, like, I like Wendy's. Wendy's is great. You know, it's like 25 years ago. But he shared that story. And a lot of stories like that. Just down, you know, a lot of these leaders are very down to earth. You know, that's really my point. You know, they say things, they fall short, they miss the mark. You know, they're just human beings. They're not perfect. They know that. Some of them don't know that. That's a mistake. Then that leads to something else, you know. The ones that realize, you know, I'm gonna quit smoking. This is, you know, there's a CEO, he smokes like three packs of cigarettes a day. He smells like Camel's sticks every day. And it's like, dude, what are you doing? You know, is it that bad? I'm like, no, it's not that bad. I'm just, I don't know. I can't quit. So it's that simple. It's just, they're just human beings. They're all working through stuff. And, you know, it really just comes down to being down to earth, realizing your weaknesses, realizing your strengths, especially viscerally, emotionally, and then learning how to, you know, outgrow those weaknesses. So that's what I find, I think, is stands out for a lot of these companies, having those kind of leaders.
That's really good. So I guess, what is the one biggest piece of advice that you would give to somebody that, you know, is looking up to you and say, hey, like, I want to be in your position one day, like to get to that level, to have, you know, be CEO, run their own financial company? Like, what is the one biggest piece of advice you have for someone like that?
I would say be humble. I made a lot of mistakes in the past, believing that I knew everything or knowing I didn't know everything, and then tried to act like I did know everything and I really didn't. And then, you know, and then you make a mistake and it's like, you just ruin people's expectations of you. So, and it's fractured a lot of relationships for me in the past. But with this particular profession in wealth management, I took a different approach. You know, even though I knew a lot about money and finance, I didn't know everything, you know? So when I started at UBS, I was like, well, I don't know, how would I manage a portfolio? You know, how do I, you know, why do people want to invest in this? I would ask, I mean, even though I kind of knew the answer, you know, look, investment banking and wealth management are not the same. When you are raising capital, it's a different story. Why they're going to invest in it is a different story. So I had to change stories, to change my whole programming around money. And I had to ask a lot of questions. I didn't want to pretend, you know, oh, I'm just a banker and about money. You know, well, but didn't know about wealth management really. So that was really the big, this is why I'm still in wealth management, because I'm willing to admit that I make mistakes. And again, I'm willing to admit that I have weaknesses, and I'm willing to admit that I miss the mark. And, you know, I didn't mention this earlier, but I actually had tried to start two other businesses before I went to wealth management, and they both failed. And the financial decisions I made to start those companies were horrible, horrible. I turned away investors because they wanted control of the company. And I put this in air quotes because I realized later that control and ownership are two different things as an entrepreneur. People think because you're investment banking, you're in high finance and you're supposed to be really smart at everything. I don't find that to be the case, at least not for me, you know? And I don't see a lot of investment bankers starting businesses either, you know? So I think it really just comes down to being humble and just really being on a journey of learning about what it is that you're actually doing and what it really means. At the end of the day, being in the wealth management business is not about me. It's about what clients are looking for and what their needs are and their pain points. It's about discovering who they are. Less about me discovering myself and being high about my skill set. None of that really, you know, I mean, it does matter, but it matters much, much less than I thought. I think that's been a big change, big shift for me, for others, I think.
Awesome. So if someone watching this wanted to work with you or reach out to you, what's the best way that they can get in contact with you?
They can DM me, or they can email. I think my email is in my LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn, and I also started becoming active on Instagram. So those are the two places where they can reach me. They can DM me, they can email me. I have a newsletter called Grover, which I talk about investing and financial planning, sort of my process around it. And so some of it is all informational. Some of it is, you know, infotainment, you know, personal stories like I share here. And so they can all, there's a link to my calendar and the newsletter as well.
Awesome. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for your time. I will definitely sub to your newsletter. It sounds like I definitely want to hear more stories and more of what you have to share. So I really enjoyed our conversation.
Cool.
Awesome. Thanks.
Sounds good. Appreciate that.
Thanks.
Appreciate
all
that.
Right. All right. Bye.
Take care.